Blog Talk Radio.
Did you ever stop to know?
everyone. Good evening. Thank you for tuning in to Enhancing Awareness Radio. I am your host, Keith, and today we will be discussing spiritual awakening. Today's show is stemmed from a conversation that I had with me and my dear friend, Robert Cochran, over the past week. Robert and I always seem to come together to discuss spiritual awakening conversations about how we began to awake and how we became aware of the divine energy that moves through our lives. In tonight's show, we'll be covering how we understand spiritual awakening by sharing our awakening experiences. Also, as well, we will cover our views on do we choose when we awake, synchronicity, coincidences, the disciple and the apostle, levels of awakening, and also what we believe our divine purpose in this life to be. Tonight, I am joined with my dear friend Robert Cochran in this enticing conversation. Robert and I have been very close on our journey in recovery together, and we have grown a lot within the last few months. I am so excited to have Robert with me tonight. Robert, are you there?
Yes, Keithon, I'm here.
Hey, Robert, how are you tonight?
Hey, Keithon, I'm fabulous. How are you?
I'm doing great. All right, Robert. So, Robert, just could you tell us briefly about yourself and what led you to this moment right here, right now?
Okay. Just a very brief of my background. I was born in Montgomery, Alabama, and my dad was in the Air Force. And, you know, I spent the first couple years of my life flying back and forth from states to, like, Hawaii and back into the states. And, you know, my parents settled down in a small town outside of Shreveport, Louisiana, and it was called Benton, Louisiana. Well, it still is called Benton, Louisiana. But back in 1974, it was a very, very small place, smaller than Mayberry, but from on TV. We had one sheriff in our town, and he was the only cop as well, and he lived in a house behind us and worked out of there. You know, in our bank, we had one teller. We didn't even have a grocery store. We had a corner store, Feed and Seat. And if you didn't own horses, you had absolutely nothing to do on the weekend. So I grew up with, you know, small country values. And, you know, my whole life, you know, I got into, like, your basic kid trouble and maybe got on restriction, or maybe my grades were just, you know, nothing above D's or something. But, you know, I didn't grow up around, you know, drugs, and I didn't grow up around alcohol. And I was, like I said, other than the normal, you know, little kids getting into trouble, I never was a bad kid. And, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't until my parents in 1984, my band trip went to Florida to do mm-hmm. a marching band. And now I understand the marching band back in this town I was in, there was probably 12 of us, and that was huge for this place. And yeah, small place. So when I got back from that trip, my parents were like, surprise, we're moving to Florida. So this town I grew up in since I was like 4 years old till I was 14, all these same kids. Mm. And, you know, this is the same 13 people I went to elementary school and probably the same 13 people I would have graduated with had I stayed there. And, mm-hmm. you know, when I got to Florida, things changed. You know, it was such a small town that I never saw racism. I never saw anybody who was against sexes and races and religions, and I didn't see people who were against people who were sexual orientations, for sure. So when I moved to Florida, you know, I started getting called things that bothered me because I didn't know what they meant, and there were things like faggot, and, you know, it did play a major part in, like, my teardown. And I remember getting really angry and just, you know, just hated these people. And this is the first time I have ever felt like this. And, you know, over many years of, like, having to deal with that, I finally found an outlet. Let me just put it this way. I found an outlet when I got hired at Disney World back in 1985, and I got hired as a character. And I was able mm-hmm. to put my creativity and my comedy and who I was into my work, and that's how I got hired. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it ripped me away from that. But then, you know, my parents, that actually brought me out of the closet. Then, you know, my parents found out I was gay somehow. I still, to this day, really do not know how this happened. And they did not take kindly to it, and it caused a lot of problems. So at 16 years old, I technically moved out on my own. They gave up legal or physical custody of me and remained to have legal because I was still underage. But since I was 16, I lived on the worked out in the world and wasn't really out on the streets yet. But I did many things that I had to do to survive for a 16-year-old trying to make it out there. And it wasn't until I was 19 that I tried my first drug, and, you know, it was LSD. And then and it was fun going to Disney on LSD. I was like, ooh, I understand Disney World now. I understand this place. And we even made a comment that people need to have, like, a hit of acid when they buy a ticket. And we made comments like this because you do understand the place. Those Imagineers know what they're doing. So,
wow.
You know, that was... It makes us so much sense to you. You understand those rides and where their heads were when they just designed them. But with that little joke in mind, you know, we did say that they should pass out one of those. So that bridged into other things because it was all recreational and fun to me. You know, it wasn't masking pain. And so from there it went to ecstasy. From ecstasy it went to still doing that, but then mushrooms got introduced. And it wasn't until back in 1997, when I learned about meth. Now, this is now 6 years after I actually found out I was diagnosed with it being HIV positive. So with all these drugs and then the new one, old crystal meth, I got introduced to that one. And then that one became mainly the only one I did. And over just many years, I mean, from 97, and it took a long time for it to get into my life where it started taking things away and making me not want to work and wanted to, like, keep having fun with people and trying to keep up with them and all those things that mattered to me, those small-town values that I cherished, you know, and kept in me. It started tearing those down so slowly that I was, like, blindsided to it. I never saw it coming until everything was so gone and I was struggling. And I still didn't even see my struggles. I thought, I'm handling it, you know, even though I was, like, couch jumping house to house. To me, that was like I was handling it. So, you know, about a year ago, I decided to leave Florida because everybody that I had known left, and people don't stay there because it's such a transient state, especially Orlando, Florida. People move there, they realize it's all Disney, all Universal, all SeaWorld, and then they leave, so you don't really have many friends. And I just decided to pack up and go and head west. And I was on my way to Dallas, and, you know, I had a pickup truck. I was going to sell it. And it blew up on the way. The transmission casing exploded.
Wow.
I didn't get to sell my truck. So when I got to Dallas, even though I had a job, now I didn't have a way to sell my truck and to find an apartment. So the struggle started all over, even though I was still doing my drugs and thought I was in control. You know, my whole life I've just tried to keep in control. And so when I got here, I struggled, and the meth use went out of control because I was doing it for reasons to have a roof over my head, to, like, just one more night and trying to keep that control. Like, I got it, and I got the mentality of what is wrong with other people that they can't control or handle their, you know, like, liquor or drugs, and I'm the one that's going to give it up because they're all freaking out on me. And I never saw it as a problem or my problem. It was always there. And so it took 1 year, and I was homeless. I became homeless, and, you know, I was a truck driver for 11 years, and I worked at Disney for many years, and, you know, and now I'm homeless and struggling and pissing people off, and, you know, One day, just something happened, and I started to wake up, and that kind of what brought me to this point. And I would like to go into more detail with it now that, you know, I'm in Dallas and things are looking up, and it's the point that I got to Dallas where that spiritual awakening started, and the realizing that I was powerless over addictions, and more or less I was powerless over myself. So that's what kind of brought me to this point. Just, you know, I had a great life. Just in the introduction to substances just kind of went one thing to another. And then a wonderful chain of events, as I say, brought me to this point, but a lot of struggles on the way, which make up that strength in that chain. So that's about a little bit about me.
Wow, Robert. I mean, that's a very remarkable story. You know, a lot of it I had no idea. But yeah, that's but you know, you're in a much better place now. It's just such a beautiful story though. So,
yeah.
So Robert, let's start off with spiritual awakening defined. Spiritual awakening is defined as the waking up of consciousness to the remembrance of its original nature. It is a movement of the psyche where the individual sense of self-identification has fallen away. And awareness stands with nothing to identify itself, and yet it knows itself as being aware. It is like moving from a noun to a verb. Instead of someone we know, we are awareing, sensing, thinking, feeling, or being whatever movement is happening in this moment, in this one moment. At the time, the physical body, mind, has become irrelevant. Waking up to our true nature is how I like to describe it. So what does this statement mean to you?
Oh, a good one. You know, I'm not scholared or everything, but you know, I will tell you the best teachers I've had was just life in general. That was my best scholar. But
yeah.
For me, I say that just so I can relate to a lot of people out there who are just learning these things like I did. But
yeah.
For me, spiritual awakening, it was one day, you know, being in control of my own life was like, I don't know how to relate this. Once I realized that I could not control my own life, and that's all it really was, you know, when I realized my addiction had taken over me so hardcore, I remember talking with you at one point, and I made it like this, that it was like waking up in the morning, and you've had a really good to hard sleep. You're so far into your dreams, your lucid dreams, so deep into them that when you wake up, you're groggy. And
yeah.
That grogginess was like a fog, and, you know, it's kind of like the sleep in your eyes. So as I'm like the spiritual awakening was a slow awakening and clearing and wiping my eyes. And, you know, over time, there were different levels, and I just, those levels to me were yawning and then getting out of bed and just, you know, stretching and starting to where there was total clarity, and, you know, now I can move throughout my day without being blind. Spiritual, that's what it is to me. It's just a slow awakening where you realize that it's something deeper and more than just you. And once you're out of that dream state of, you know, where you think you're controlling everything, that's when you're starting to literally wake up. That's what it is to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, Robert, we actually share that alike, where our spiritual awakening revolved around addiction. You know, because I know for me, my spiritual awakening, it's so funny because I was guided to buy this book. You know, my spirit told me to buy this book, and the book is called The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. And what the book pretty much says is pretty much teaching you about living in the now. So I didn't understand this at all because I guess the best way to describe it, I was like trapped in the matrix where, you know, all I knew was this everyday life, everything, you know, that I was conditioned, that's conditioned. You know, that's all that I knew. I knew nothing else, but I was guided to this book. So, you know, I held on to the book for about a few months, and I had ended up checking into rehab. You know, my spirit was like, enough. I got tired of trying to control my own life, just as you stated. I know that all so well, you know, and we do that for so long, but at this point, you know, my spirit was saying, enough, Keith, enough. Go just drop everything and grab this book and check into rehab. So it was just like this voice began to talk to me, and I actually started listening to the voice. I had never listened to that voice throughout my whole life, and I just thought, I started to listen to it, so I did it. So I think, like, when we actually become willing to listen to that voice, whatever it may be, because I didn't understand what it was at the time. But I checked into rehab, and I started to read the book A Power of Now. And as I started reading it, I was like a few chapters in, and I just started seeing the world in like this whole new perspective, like my spirit, it started to resonate. You know, everything that I learned in church, you know, didn't really resonate with me. And it was like my spirit was crying out for something to resonate with me, but it wasn't until I read this book that I began to start awakening. You know, it was a small level, you know, that we'll talk about that later, but it's many different levels of awakening. It was like just being awake to understanding the power of living in the now, which is a different perspective than living in the matrix, and then, you know, it goes on and on and on from there. So, you know, with our stories, do you think that we choose when we awake?
For me, my experiences, I'm going to say no, because there were many times I feel like I tried to, like as if you're dreaming and you're having a lucid dream, and sometimes you can, there are some people out there, and I think it's happened to me once, where you can actually wake up in your dreams and control them. But for me, my awakening is not something I can control, because I thought for many years doing drugs and that I could be in control of it and wake up from this nightmare and make it all right. But just like you keep on, it was I didn't have that, you know, book. My book was life. And probably if I was more into reading books, I probably would have. But
I wasn't either, Robert. And not at all. I used to. Yeah, go ahead.
I always been like, if they can make a movie out of it, it will catch my attention quicker, because I just reading killed me. But there have been some amazing things out there that I have read. But when I realized one day, and it's so similar to your story, but yet so different in a lot of the words we use. But you know, I remember one day a friend of mine was dropping me off at this the center where they help people that are homeless and who are HIV positive. And I was being dropped off there, and I've always struggled with a voice inside me that was like, you know, it was fighting with other people, like, you know, why do I have to give up something when I'm in control? And then it was just this one day that when I was being dropped off, and I was like so tired of the struggle, and this voice said, Robert, go get help. And I said it to this sense, and I walked into this place, and two dear friends, and to me they're still guardian angels. They listened, and they, even though they worked at this center, and that's part of their job, they went a little bit out of their element and listened and cared. And I was like, I need help, guys. I had this struggle. I can't deal with this struggle anymore. And I don't know truly what that meant. It just meant I didn't want to go on. And I don't know if that meant with life or I just didn't want to go on with the drugs. But it was serious, and it was scary to me, because I've never felt that low before. And, you know, they took me to a detox place, and for 3 days I sat in a chair and watched television, because that's what everyone did there. And you weren't allowed to move. It was nice, because it just made you focus. And you had, it was almost like meditation. You couldn't do anything. You had to stay within yourself. And for me, I mean, other people were going nuts, but for me, I got to understand, and I had to really look at what was going on and what I'm going to have to do. This, which seemed so hardcore, tough at that moment, just sitting in a chair inside of a room and not being able to move for 3 days was really something that I had to dig deep and go, okay, this is the beginning of something that's going to take a lot of work, and is this going to be worth it? That was like the beginning of my meditation, and then that led me to a wonderful place called Homeward Bound here in Dallas. And It wasn't until I was in there in the crisis unit, which are people that, you know, are in that mental state where, you know, they don't want to go on. And from there, another divine thing happened. You know, I told somebody in there I was HIV positive because they were about to release me back out into the street because I was detoxed. And I wasn't like suicidal like everybody else, I guess, was, because they didn't see me as a threat. And I said, you know, I'm HIV positive. I'm homeless. I'm addicted to drugs. And when they said heard HIV positive, it put me into a new area inside Homeward Bound, and it was a different unit. And I got to, that's where, you know, eventually we met. But that was like the beginning of this divine plan that I now see. And forgot where I was going with that, but.
You know, Robert, that you know, it's funny. I'm so hung on what you said about the meditation, how you just sat there for those 3 days and you meditated, and it was like you knew that it was something inside of you. You know, that's the same. You know, someone told me that we all have different stories, but if you look at it, we all really have the same story. And even though we're using different situations, but it all meets together collectively in some form or fashion. And because it was the same for me, like I this whole rehab thing was all new to me. I didn't know what the hell to expect. I just felt like out of my comfort zone. And I sat down with that book, and I was like meditating inside of that book was the meditation. I had to sit still, and I had to read and meditate within that book. And I think that, like, for me, that's when the awakening started. Like you said, it started to awaken something that was big. You could feel it, but you didn't know what it was, but it was just that point where you were starting to awake. And, I mean, that is just so beautiful. You know, Robert, you had – go ahead.
I remember it felt like something big was coming, and that's what I guess what I meant by I knew it was going to be a rough road. It was going to be a lot of work, but I felt something big was coming within those 3 days, and I had to like just sit there, and I had to like go into my own self because I had to tune out a lot of people around me. There were people in there that were hearing voices in their heads that wanted to hurt themselves. So I had to I had to not focus on that. And that began a journey for me to not listen to other people and to start focusing only on me, because I wasn't there because of them and I shouldn't be focused on them. I'm there for me. And I had to, the beginning of that other journey of self-realization of all these little, as the program that I'm in called Effects of Character, you know, that I'm, you know, I got to stop being the victim and I've got to stop maximizing problems. And it was that moment where I started waking up to what was really going on. It wasn't the drugs. It was something in me going on. And that's when I started to like open my eyes and see the haze. And that's when I needed to start wiping the sleep away.
Absolutely. You know, Robert, you stated before that there is a bridge up until spiritual awakening. You know, would that bridge be described as what you're pretty much saying, like your whole story in which led you up to this very moment? What did you mean by that statement?
Because I truly feel that, you know, there are all these things in my path, you know, were a bridge to this moment. Without the things that have happened, so much wouldn't have opened up that, you know, I'm now starting to see. And it, some people might kind of call it a divine path. And for me, it was a bridge that was built during my life. And it was a bridge that was designed just for me to cross over and to go into this new self-realization and this awakening of what was to come. Because in my upbringing with God or churches or anything, I didn't grow up religious. My parents were truly into letting me find my own path. And they never really pushed religion. Now, my mom, she was, you know, she wasn't religious, like a hardcore person, but, you know, she read the Bible and she liked it, but she didn't damn me to hell or anything when I found out I was gay. they just couldn't understand it and didn't deal with it. And I remember going to youth group studies, and they would start talking about, you know, things, and I didn't like how they were talking about it because I so did not agree, you know. And then many years later, I came across the pagan religion, and I remember, like, hearing about it, because I actually dated someone who was pagan, so I had to, instead of being scared of something, you know, that I was dating a witch, I actually had to read about it, because I'm not going to just, you know, freak out and, like, pass judgment unless I knew something about it. And I liked their motto. Their motto was, "And it harm none, do what thou will." And that is just be good to yourself, be good to people around you, don't harm anything or anyone. You know, do your best. And then it's like, do as you want, as long as it just doesn't harm anything or anyone. And I kind of liked that. And they believe in, like, reincarnations. Mm-hmm. And it just, there was so much about it that I was, like, hitting home to. And I do believe that there's this energy in life. There's something that created, because, I mean, the sun gives plants energy. That's energy. It's just there. It's predominantly in your face that there's something that created life. And, you know, for me, that's all I needed to hang on to. And I didn't view it as a god like they were in church. As a young kid, that's where, you know, I stemmed from. And I just believe this bridge that was built for me later on in life is what, you know, took me away from a lot of beliefs. And because I remember being really young, and my first recollection with having to deal with God was I growing up in Louisiana. Our Louisiana State Fair came after the Texas State Fair. And I remember I waited 2 weeks. I was excited because I'm a thrill ride junkie. And I was kids that when my parents would drive by a fair, I'm sitting there in the back seat squealing and jumping and screaming. And this was me as a little kid. And so this is my excitement. And 2 weeks had gone by. And the day that, you know, all my friends in school, we all had this day planned for 2 weeks. We're going to go to the fair this day. And that day came after 2 weeks of gorgeous weather. That day came, and it was cloudy, and it rained all freaking day, and my first experience with God was pointing up to the sky and cussing him out. How dare he ruin my day? Yeah. You know, the one day I had set to have fun, and, you know, I cussed him out, and I sold my soul to the devil. Because obviously God wasn't on my side that day. So if the devil could make it sunny, you know, he could have me. But it didn't make it sunny at all. So I guess he didn't want my soul. He didn't want my soul either. So that's my first recollection with, like, a God and how I had to deal with religion in a way. But,
you know, Robert, let me ask you, okay, I know in my experience, when my spirit began to awake, I didn't specifically have a higher power in mind. I was upset with the Christian church, and I didn't want, like, any parts of it. I was mad at God. Like, how could you judge me? How could someone that says they love me let awful things happen to me in my life? Yep. I was just, like, so confused, you know? And so, like, what has been your experience in awakening to the God of your understanding, like, right here, right now? Yes.
With the little bit of the background I just talked about, you know, being, they say in the AA Big Book that we try our whole lives, the ones out of us that are a little cuckoo in the head, that we try to be the producers, the directors, the actors of our show. And it's not until we understand that we are not in control of our show here on Earth, and understand that where I've come from, you know, the state of hurricanes, you know, I now know why they didn't have a Robert Hurricane, a name stormed after me, because I've already been there, and I already left a huge path of destruction. And, you know, when I came here and I learned about that, with that playing in my head, I was like, wow, I looked back on my own show and the people I was pissing off, I understood, like, my ratings were low with my own show. People didn't want to hang around me. They didn't want to tune into the Robert Cochran Hour. They were like, drama, this is bad script, let's change the channel. And, you know, once I got into treatment and I learned about that, and I was like, well, it's true. Me being in control of my own show, I can't write it. I can't direct it. Hell, I can't even act in my own life. That's pretty bad. And one day over at Homeward Bound, friends of mine were going over across the street to this Baptist church. And for me growing up, yet again, for me growing up in Florida, where Baptists are, a lot of them are radicals, and they blow up abortion clinics and they picket gay events. You know, I go, you know, one day it just, I wanted to get out of the unit. Something in me was like, hell, I'll go to church. Sure, I get to get out of the treatment unit for 2 hours. Hell, I'll go. So with that, something in me, it's something just, I don't believe that was a coincidence, because, I mean, I just, honestly, that would have never have happened for some reason in my past, just to do that and say, hey, I'm bored, I want to go to church. And I went there that day, and, wow. and our pastor was talking about how humbled and how honored he was to be helping this homosexual who was dying of AIDS. And for a Baptist pastor, to me, it caught my attention. Yeah. It, something was just perfectly said that it caught my attention. Like it was directed not at me, but something that I can relate to, because that's my views against it. And I think that was when, after, you know, my help going into treatment, which, you know, I checked myself into and became willing to accept new ideas and accept anything. Because if you're going to ask for anything in life, it's not going to have a good outcome unless you are so open to receive it. You can ask and ask and ask and ask and ask, but until you are truly open to receive what you're asking for, it's just, it's not going to, I don't think it connects. I don't think there's this synchronicity.
absolutely.
So I think that's kind of where the beginning of it, there was like these many little ingredients that just played into the spiritual awakening. You know, the fact that I had to be accepting to, you know, to understand and to accept the things I truly was asking for, that I needed help, and the fact that I was, you know, looking outside of my own selfishness and my own stubbornness to actually just go to a church, you know, because I would have been stubborn and went, hell no, I'm not going to step foot in that building. And I think it's just, there were many ingredients that started to contribute to this, even though people around me were seeing it and going, wow, Robert, I mean, just the things that were starting to happen that other people were seeing, it was kind of freaking me out a little bit. So I think that was the beginning of it.
Wow. You know, for me, on that same topic, how I'm awakening to the God of my understanding, you know, that first time when I was in rehab, I was just so pissed at God. I just didn't want any parts of the Christian church, any of that. And for me, it took me actually, that was in 2010, and I had to come back to rehab again in 2013. So it took me about 2 years to actually find, I needed to have like a communion with this divine energy that, you know, wanted to lead my life. I mean, I had to become friends with it. I didn't know what to call it. You know, I didn't know. I was so pissed off at the church. I had a resentment. Actually, in step four, the church was like one of my resentments, because they was not accepting of homosexuality. You know, it was all of these things against, you know, who I felt that I was being at the present time. You know, they wasn't loving me, or I didn't feel the love at all. So it took me about 2 years to search for that and to find that and to have that friendship with God and communion with God, with the help of Neil Donald Walsh, which is a great author. And he has these dialogues of God, you know, in a friendship of God, communion with God, and the revelation conversation. Something about revelations. And I read those three books, and it started to awaken my spirit even more and more and more. And I started to trust this entity, you know, in which I felt that I needed to. I started to trust it, and I started to love it, and I started feeling the love back with it. So it took me a while to play with that, if you will. And, you know, and with that, I started to call it the universe at first. And, I mean, you've heard me a few times call it the universe, because I felt that, you know, universal means everything. So I didn't have a specific thing that I wanted to label it as. You know, I didn't want to label it because I wasn't sure if I was doing the right thing by labeling it. So I just wanted to kind of keep it open to just the divine energy of love, you know. So,
right.
So, yeah, so with that, you know, this love was just, it was just growing and growing and growing over the years to where I'm now able to go back into the church. And it's, and what you said about the pastor at the church here in Dallas, oh my God, you know, and Robert, you did start that, now that I think about it, because after that, we all started following suit after you, and we all felt welcome, we all felt love, and I mean, even people that would normally even think about church started to go, it's like you start feeling the love, and that's when my resentment started to fade away, because I'm like, wow, you know, the churches really are loving, you know, like, not all of them, unfortunately, but you know, there is hope. I mean, there is
right.
hope, you know, and oh, I cannot even begin to express how Cliff Temple, you know, Baptist Church here in Dallas, I'm going to go ahead and say the name because that is an awesome church, guys. I mean, Cliff Temple Baptist Church in Dallas,
really,
in Oak Cliff area. It is just amazing. And, I mean, they just move mountains. They do things for the rehab center, and they hold classes, and they tell stories and everything. And it's just nothing but love. Yeah, go ahead.
And they're pro-gay. For me, that's a huge thing, because that is so one of the things with racism and against homosexuality. They are welcoming mm-hmm. to everyone. I've never walked, and it's not that it's just a church. To me, it is like being around so many friends, because I've never seen a place where you can walk through and every single person will say good morning to you, and it's not like you're passing someone on the street and you're like, yo, bro, what's up? I mean, this truly is, they look you at the face, and they will almost stop to shake your hand and say good morning, and it doesn't matter who, what you are. You could be purple, green, black, white, blue, striped, plaid, and you could be straight or gay or confused or, you know, totally straight of life, or you could be like this hardcore suffering addict, anything, and they are welcoming you. They truly, it's that, to me, that is universal. That is universal love, because, you know, I'm like you, Keith. When I first tried to understand, you know, what this energy of life was, I didn't see the biblical, you know, formations that people saw. I didn't see this all being, you know, this, you know, way out in the space, or and Jesus saying, all of that was just such a disconnect for me. And I'm starting to understand that, because I've always, the one thing I said, if there is a God, God is there. He truly, his definition is just love, and it's kindness, and it's everything. And that's all I understood growing up, because just, you know, when you're laughing and having a good time and you're being nice and you're just doing the right things, that's when you feel this like high, this feeling inside you that, I mean, and then people around you see that, and or they feel it, and they want to be around you. And, you know, the negativity that the drugs that we were doing and, like, how our behaviors were, it breeded a whole different kind of our own hell. And I really always said if there was a hell, you know, because I don't know what happens when we go on, but I do know if there was a hell, it was Earth. Because what I was experiencing was, like, anything that was, for me, would be the worst case scenario of dying and having to live a whole life like that over and over and over. That was my own hell. That was my understanding. And when it came to a God of my understanding, a spiritual awakening, you know, it was a friend of mine in Florida, his house, when he got it, he was like, "There, it's haunted." And, you know, in my whole life, I always believed there were ghosts. And, you know, and it wasn't until one night sleeping in his house that I, you know, he's got like 14 cabinets that have two doors per cabinet, and all of these doors at like 3:30 in the morning just started slamming at different times. not like bam or bam. They were all going off at the same time, but not like bam, bam. It just cleared everything. And it went on for, it seemed like an eternity, even though it was probably like 6 seconds. And, you know, until that moment where I was like, wow, there really are, I reflected one day back on that, and I was like, if I had no problem my whole life believing that there are ghosts out there, which are spirits, and they're forms of energy floating around, why is it so hard for me to believe in something that can create life, whether it was the Big Bang Theory? Still, that was energy exploding, and, you know, and whatever it truly is, I do believe something created it all. I mean, I don't know if it sat there with a blueprint and was like, okay, this stage two. And, you know, it truly could have been that way. No one knows except for the people that first walked this earth. And, you know, no one knows, and far be it for me to judge, because of what I've, like, learned and experienced, anything is possible. And coincidences, yeah, whatever. It's just it plays in your head when you don't know if there's a God, but then things happen that are so incredible that you're like, oh, really? You know, there were times I should have been dead, like driving in a car, being behind a dump truck one time, and the dump part was like standing straight in the air, but I didn't notice that until I decided to pass this vehicle, and it was just me and him on the road on a 2-lane interstate. It was like 10 minutes later, I was like, why am I behind this vehicle? So I got over and passing him like 1 mile an hour faster. It wasn't like I was tailgating. But once I got right beside it and looked up and I thought, that ain't right. That dump part hit a bridge that went over the interstate and ripped the dump part off the truck. And it fell right where my vehicle was that last second. And I truly believe that. And for me, my grandmother loved me dearly. And I do believe that she is out there watching me. Because there were moments like that, and they happen a lot with me, that something said, Robert, you need to pay attention, get over. And that's how my spiritual awakening been. You know, I joke about it, that God has been thumping me in the head going, okay, do you get it now? I exist. I'm here. Hello. Because it was that moment where the pastor talked about that homosexual who was dying of AIDS, and I was like, what? You're a pastor of a Baptist church, and you're talking about being humbled? And you didn't know what you did to deserve such an honor. And to me, that was something that, you know, certain people, and there were already people going to this church who listened to his word and how this this man, Brent McDougall, taught. And it was like there were moments where there were some of us that weren't getting it. And I believe that this is where all that spiritual awakening starts to happen, that when we're open to receive these wonderful things, that life can be better for every single one of us. All we have to do is be open to receive it and truly, truly, truly want a better way of life.
Yeah, the willingness, that grave willingness, you know. One of my mentors always says, you know, Keith, just show up. Be willing and just show up, and the rest will take care of itself.
Right.
Absolutely. Okay, Robert, in the Bible, they talk about the disciples and the apostles. A disciple is noted to be like a student who is listening to the teacher and learning about life, whereas the apostle is someone who is called out to teach. What has been your experience of being a disciple? And do you think that you've been called to be an apostle?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not something like, you know, I'm not trying to, if for anyone out there listening, I'm not trying to compare myself to like Jesus or his followers or anything. But, you know, I think each one of us in life, we do have this opportunity, and it could be something so great as leading a country or, you know, and in the right way. I mean, as long as there's love in your heart and kindness and something that you're truly wanting from it. Rather than, you know, the greed and the deadly sins or anything. But with that being said, I've learned so much in life, the hardships of growing up gay and then being thrown out of my family and not being accepted, being so broken down by drug abuse and drug use, that, you know, there all those bad things that, you know, like you said, how could a God, you know, allow things like this to happen? But it seems like this. It's like a teacher going to school. Unless they've learned and studied, you know, the books, they can't teach their topic. Now, there's some things you just can't freaking learn in school or in books. You have to learn, like, you have to learn the hard way. And, you know, this is part of my awakening. And, you know, not everybody can learn it through manual reading. And there's some of us out there that have the capacity. Yeah, I mean, I guess there's some of us that are chosen. Because there's no way. I mean, I've always told people that I've gone out with, because they're very literate, and they, you know, like I said, I'm not a person who likes to read, because I don't absorb the information. I absorb by doing, and I absorb by living the experience. And some people are opposite of that. They don't get it. So I do believe there are chosen ones who are meant to, like, read, be scholars, and then there's some of us who are meant to live and be scholars. Or be disciples at first. So life was my teacher, and, you know, I look back on all these things that I saw as so bad, that now I've got these tools through, you know, like, wonderful things like learning through life and not repeating the same mistakes twice and trying to better it to becoming aware of, like, that there is something greater out there that is controlling life. I don't know if it's sitting there with a magic wand going, poof, you're healed, or, you know, I do believe that it's kind of like that karmatic debt that we all talk about. It's like what you get, what you give. And that is just like help people with God. But with being a disciple, I've been open, and even though I never thought was open to learning these things, these bad things, because, God, why did they have to happen to me? But now I know that, you know, I can turn around, and I want to, you know, start where I can go to, you know, youth places where kids are gathering who have no place to go because their parents threw them out when they're gay, and hearing a story of my struggle and how I was on the street too. And, you know, and I made the best of it. I tried to create laughter in my life. I'm very animated, and I'm very charismatic. And my whole thing in life is I want to make people laugh. And I tell dirty jokes, or I'll take anything and twist it into dirty. I'll do anything as long as it can make them laugh without offending them. And that's where I feel like, you know, I have been a disciple my whole life, and I'm learning the things that I was meant to learn. And yes, I had to learn the hard way, and, you know, and I'm not saying that I suffered any more than anyone out there, but our own degrees and our own levels of that have to be different, because I do believe that this energy that created life, this is what we give it, to give it knowledge that makes it all knowing. And I do think that I'm called to be an apostle, because I have a lot I can teach, and my experiences are different from everybody else's, which makes every one of us unique, like a teacher in schools. We're all unique how we teach and how we've learned our things, because every teacher has their own way of teaching, and some are more, you know, creative than others, and that's just like us. And so to answer your question, yes, about the disciple, and yes, about the apostle.
You know, it's with me, I know, first off, for the record, I believe that we're all disciples in some form, fashion, because life teaches each and every one of us, you know, if we just pay attention to what's going on, you know. And I know for me, I was pretty much a disciple, and still disciple, you know, in my whole life, you know, and you know, the most profound lessons that I learned was through my addiction. You know, I was like, okay, why the hell am I walking around this earth like a zombie, you know, on strung out on drugs? You know, like, why am I going through this? I used to always question God, you know, why me? And, you know, it dawned on me that everything
freaking thing that I went through my drug addiction. And, I mean, it was some hardcore stuff. And, I mean, I knew in my heart that I was better than this. Like, I am enough. I am better. Why am I, you know, projecting as I'm not good enough? You know, I was operating out of that lack mentality. And for years, you know, I was just going through some chaotic crap. And now it all makes sense, because just in this very moment with me and you, Robert, with just, you know, we coming together as part of in this journey of life, and we're sharing our stories, you know, hoping in the intentions to help, you know, one another out. You know, this is a part of the apostle teaching, you know, where we're able to go out and teach. And even like you, Robert, oh, my God, if you could just share the story about how, you know, all these things started lining up for you, and I mean rapidly, Robert. And I mean just, what was it, last week that you, in an AA meeting, you know, that you had been attending, and go ahead and share that. You have to share that.
Okay, well, this one is like the overwhelming factor of life for me, because, with checking into rehabs, with my willingness, all this, these things where I finally said, I can't control myself, I'm going to give it up, you know, and it wasn't like I was like, God, take it away, you know, I just said, I can't do it anymore, I'm going to allow everyone or anything do it for me, and not meaning, you know, milk a system or something, just I was open to a new experience. And, you know, that it was that day in that church where this is how it had worked for me. I remember once I heard the pastor talk about that, I leaned over to one of my friends who was going through treatment, and I said to him, I said, I like this. I want this place to be my home group, like just like an AA, and that's how I felt. It wasn't like I was in a church like most of them are. I just said, this is where I want my family and my home to be, and I would love to be baptized here. And this is, I mean, coming from the streets and from not even liking church, I mean, it was best once said in a play. The play is called Pippin, and one thing he learns about the church, and he quotes it by saying, the church isn't about saving souls. It's investing in real estate. And I so believe, like, little things like that. And here is a place that is just, it's under a roof, yes, a beautiful, beautiful building, and yet there is full of love. And when I said I would love to be baptized here, at that moment, the pastor was like, if anybody would like to be baptized, please come to the front. And I was like, okay, that was creepy. So I went up there, and they prayed for me. But then things, like, I had never had clothes. And so when I started... Praying was really hard for me because it's so, one, it's foreign. I've never gotten on my knees. And what I've come to understand all prayer truly is looking inside your heart and centering yourself. And literally just, if you can use your third eye and just act like your words are a beam of energy shooting up into the cosmos. Not like you're talking to a biblical figure. It's just you're giving that energy out to the world, true heartfelt energy. And I would start meditating on my knees at my bed, aka prayer, and just saying, you know, I want everyone in life to be happy. I want, you know, everyone to be sober. And like 30 minutes later, I'm still kneeling at my bed and I'm crying and I'm like, and the kids in Egypt and the ones that are all the moms. And I'm like, please. It was so crazy. My first prayer, I just went off. It went global. And I remember talking and I'm like 30 minutes later, I'm crying for the kids in Egypt, you know, the war going on there. I'm like, what is going on with me? Just all, once I started giving love through thoughts, it just wouldn't stop. And I was praying for people that had wronged me and asking for forgiveness of the people I've wronged. And it's not like someone's going to – it was just putting that energy out there that I'm sorry, that I want something better for people around me. And I remember right at the end of that, I was like, okay, and P.S., I don't have any clothes anymore because I've lost everything over the years. And I knew I had job interviews coming up. And, you know, this is like probably 3 months into my sobriety. I'm only 4 months sober. And 3 months into my sobriety, all these other wonderful things where my friends were thumping me on the leg in church going, Robert, you just asked about that. And we would talk about something out of the blue, like a play, like Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. And we were discussing this in church. And the next day, inside the treatment center, this guy and this woman, they do a storyteller session. They came in, and what was the one play they brought up out of the millions they could have, over millions of topics that could have been discussed, but Joseph? And it was just a weird thing, more than coincidence, because it was something that was a really big topic in the day church, but... So I just would send this energy straight up into the cosmos, and I was like, if you could just, I need clothes, and I was like, the transitional house I'm staying in, you know, it's a great place. This program of Homeward Bound is amazing. If you could bless this house with, you know, something, and it deserves it. And then I needed, I needed something basic, just, and it wasn't like a need, because like a greedy need. I needed something to get my phone fixed, because this day and age we do need our phones. I was going to get interviews. Hopefully people are going to start accepting my applications. So the next day I go to a class to finish up one of these little healthy relation classes that was being presented to our groups. And I walk in, and something got me there 30 minutes early before anybody else got there, and I don't know what. And I got there, and then there was like this box on the floor of fabric, and I was like, oh, I saw a pair of jeans, and I was like just looking at it cutely. And the woman goes, oh, a guy here at the Bank of America just donated that box. If there's anything in there you would like, you can have. I walked home with two laundry bags, massive laundry bags full of clothes, and I was like, how could that have happened that quick? And here was the clincher. Yeah. All the other clothes that were donated while we were in treatment, Keithon, I remember you know, how everybody would pick through them, because we're all homeless. We all had no clothes. Yeah. But none of them, they were always large, extra large. Yeah. And, you know, I'm like you. I'm kind of thin, because we were all emaciated from never eating.
Yeah.
So, you know, what was so wonderful about this little prayer was it was just not just a donation. They were my exact size. And to me, that was way, and then I get home 30 minutes later, and all of a sudden the house has been blessed with donations, and then someone was like, hey, here's some cash to get your phone fixed. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Three things were answered the next day, and that freaked me out. I was like, and I questioned it, and I'm like, how can that happen so quickly? There's no way. That has to be coincidental, but there is no coincidences.
You know, Robert, this is a perfect time, because it's been so many things that just to be your friend and sit back and just witness how synchronicity and coincidences just has showed up in your life. You know, that I had always struggled with that statement about there are no coincidences. And I'm like, how the hell is it no coincidences? Till I really started to pay attention, and life, you know, had proven that in life there are no coincidences. Just that I remember with you, with every time, you know, they would bring clothes to Homeward Bound, you know, you would just pick through them, and, you know, you would be like sad afterwards, you know, like these, everybody's always taking, you know, they were, a lot of them were being greedy, just always taking, and just to see that, I remember when you came home and you showed me, you went from like three garments of clothes and like one, I think you had one pair of shoes, and you know, you would always be kind of self-conscious about, you know, does this look okay, and, you know, because you felt as if you were recycling everything, and you had a wardrobe. I mean, like, it was like magic. Voila. You know, you had a wardrobe. And that's just one of the many things that's been going on, that's been going on in your life. You know, you've been quoted on saying that it's all a beautiful plan. Could you talk about how you awaken to the vision that it's all a beautiful plan?
Okay. I remember what started this. I think it planted the seed in my head to a realization I had just a couple of days ago. I got into a program that gave free dental care, and sadly, one of my back teeth collapsed in the middle because all the ecstasy and the grinding and the gum that I did, you know.
Yeah.
You know, my tooth collapsed, so I found this over-the-counter putty that you can put if you lose a filling, and it kind of killed it. Well, it did kill the pain. It killed it so much that I didn't even realize I had a toothache going on anymore, that I had an exposed nerve. So, you know, one day, it wasn't until after I had to have a root canal done, and, you know, this incredible doctor that was a godsend because he was just amazing. He numbed my mouth, okay, and I went through the whole root canal procedure. And one day I was just sitting there thinking, I was in an AA meeting, and this is like hearing people share their stories and listening to them, you know, be the apostles to the new people, the newcomers of this wonderful program that AA and NA and, you know, CA, which is Cocaine's Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous and all that, all these people, they get to share their stories. And I was realizing that it just hit me because someone was talking about, you know, I think the topic of that morning was pain. And I started reflecting on my root canal and my toothache, and I was like, wow. You know, and people were sharing, they were like, you know, when something would go wrong in my life, I would have a drink, or they would talk about they would do drugs, and it would just mask that pain, like I was doing with that putty, just to kill the pain for a short time. And and then when I went in for my root canal and he numbed my mouth, you know, I reflected back on my drug use, how once things were getting bad, and I didn't want to have to deal with that, I was homeless, I would find anyone whatsoever who was willing to share their drugs. And it was such a reflection on that root canal, because here I'm going through something very painful. And yet when he numbed my mouth, that was like when I did my drugs. It disconnected me from the pain. And then after I realized that, and I came home one day, and I've been trying to get housing and this perfect, beautiful, you know, over everything in life, it brought me to this moment where now there's this wonderful program that is allowing people who are homeless, who are HIV positive, they get their own apartment, and they have to do these workshops, and they have to follow these guidelines, but it's their beautiful plan to help us get back into life and work as functional human beings. And I was laying in bed because I couldn't get everybody else around me in this house was getting, you know, to apply right away because you had to have certain documents. And there were two of these three documents I did not have. So I had to mail them off for them. They were chucking. One of them was Social Security card, and they was like, please allow 2 weeks. And I was like, ah. And then my birth certificate, I had to order it, and then it was like, it's going to take 3 days to process. Then it will be sent right through mail from Alabama. And I thought, 2 weeks. So, you know, and then
you
and
were out of sorts.
Yeah, I was way out of sorts. I was, like, upset. And I felt like the world was against me. And then, of course, when I found out I wasn't going to be able to get my birth certificate right away, I find a meth pipe in the ground that day because I believe that energy
the
I was
test.
Putting out there. Like, and I was also putting energy out there because, you know, I was saying things out loud because once you start putting out in the world that you're scared or you feel like you're going to give up, those things are going to start coming back to you. You get what you give back.
Yeah.
And, you know, the minute I started saying that I wanted to go use again, and, you know, it was like 5 minutes later after I just said that to someone that I crossed on the street that I knew, I was like, well, I'm just going to go home. I want to use, and I see a meth pipe. But, you know, I kind of lost my train of thought. So it was that numbness of the mouth, and I realized that there was like something that I was not really seeing. And so I realized that I can't control when my birth certificate and my Social Security card come in the mail. And as soon as I let that go and stop making that a victim, woe is me kind of thing, that, you know, I have seen miracles at work, you know, the as I say, God thumping me in the head, that why am I so worried? All these wonderful things have been shown to me. And that, yes, the clothes were one of those little many things. So many that I feel like that I should have been, this should have been going on for a year, not just 4 months. And
yeah.
It wasn't until then that I came home and there was my social security card laying on my bed. It had come in a week early. 2 days later, this is like after I have given up, like worrying about it and freaking out because I know I'm going to get taken care of.
Turning it over.
As soon as I turned it over and let go, as they say in AA, let go and let God. As soon as I just let go of that fear and let go of that me trying to control it again, as soon as I just let it go and let it happen, 2 days after my Social Security card gets in the mail and 2 days after I sent off for my birth certificate, voila, on my bed is my birth certificate. And I opened it up thinking it was a doctor's pill. And I just looked at it and I was like, holy crap, oh my God.
Right.
Go on.
I was going to say, I remember that night before you had actually called me and showed me, you know, like the tracking for it. And it wasn't to be expected to like days later. And it came the next day.
Exactly. It wasn't even supposed to get mailed out for like 3 more days. And somehow regular mail, you know, many states across,
regular
it got
mail.
There in 2 days. And I was like, what? And, you know, even on the internet, they were like, if you want to pay $20 more, you can have it next day aired. Well, I got it in 2 days. I mean, that's just beyond, that's beyond normality and beyond coincidental. But it wasn't until, what I said about this perfect plan, what you quoted me on, was I laid in bed, and once I knew my birth certificate happened, 2 days later, I got an interview for this housing. So it was like all came in twos. And I was kind of sleepy and I was going to take a nap. And I just lit up inside and I just started smiling in bed and went, oh my God, is this the whole plan that has, you know, I mean, from the minute, you know, I had all those hardships when I was young. Had any one of those been a derailment, if for 1 second I would have been happy at one of those miserable moments, I wouldn't be at this point. And I'm glad I went through everything because it's giving me everything in the perfect order at the perfect time to be appreciating of it, to not take anything for granted, not even breathing. I don't even take breathing for granted. Because I did OD and die on GHB back in 1997. And I remember I came out of ICU on life support. I had a tube in me breathing. And I remember, and I make jokes about it now, like had I been awake for that overdose and the horror that I truly was, I was unaware of it. I was in a 9-hour coma. So there was nothing that scared me. To me, I just kind of passed out and woke up. So had I really been able to see what happened, I think it would have been more of a shock. But I still didn't even appreciate life after that. And because I wasn't visually aware of it and consciously aware of it or spiritually aware of that overdose and that death that happened to me, how could I appreciate something that I didn't even know happened? So I think God's like, okay, well, that didn't work. Let's try it this way.
Yeah.
And it took me down a destructive path that was slowly, because I think if it would have happened big, it wouldn't have made an impact. So it's kind of like a hurricane that takes forever. And that's why I joke about me being a hurricane of Florida, something that took so long. I had to see this path of destruction to know that, wow, I was really destroying a lot of things. So when I laid in bed, I was like, this has all been too perfect. I mean, yes, the pain, the hardship, but it brought me to a state and a city that I love. It has surrounded me with people and a church and an understanding that there's something out there that all you have to do is believe that, and it doesn't even have to be a biblical God in your mind, like give that image. It's just about giving everything that you know and you've learned and using it for good. And I just started smiling. I'm like, it made sense. It might sound crazy and weird, like, you know, talking about it. But to me, because I know my life and what I want and where I want to go in life and going, you know, the things I want to learn and go to school and do welding and just
and be a missionary and help anybody and help, you know, Habitat
yeah.
for Humanity. And now I have a job at one of those big buildings that sell a lot of stuff, kind of like Lowe's. And now I'm working at one of those places. I can, like, now I have this
Robert.
This connection because it's Habitat for Humanity. So all this thing has just been a perfect plan and too perfect
Robert.
For coincidences.
Robert,
yes.
Yes. Oh, my God. Because I mean, I just had to stop you because it's like overflowing of blessings, like coming. Like you, and you know what? Here's the number two again. Within the last 2 weeks.
Yes.
Go figure. You know, we're going to have to actually study that with numerology. You know, there's symbolic meaning to numerology that we definitely
yes,
have
is.
To look into later. But within the last 2 weeks, you have been bestowed these, I mean, immaculate amount of blessings. I mean, you got the chairman at a AA meeting, and you also got
yes.
the job. You got you. I mean, wow, Robert, that's just amazing. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you move yourself out the way and you allow
yes.
the spirit to just work itself, it's just all these great things just started happening for you.
Yeah, so you got to stay out of your own head and stop controlling things. Because, you know, I want to just a very quick point. That day that I felt like everything was against me only because I couldn't get someone to pay for my birth certificate, you know, this program that I'm in. There was one aspect where they were like, no, they won't pay for it. But I was looking at it like the big picture. I maximized it. Like everybody in that whole thing was saying no when it was just this one person. And there were other options. And I took it as like a kick in the stomach by 20 people, like it felt like that. And that caused me to like want to throw away 4 months sobriety. And I was like, you know, oh, well, woe is me. I became passive aggressive and, you know, tried to like,
honey.
It was like, I was going to go use. And I made people run after me to say, no.
Yes,
so as I'm walking home, you know, and I 2 days prior, a friend of mine, we were walking down the street, and a friend of mine, we saw an empty baggie on the ground, like a little bitty, they use them for drugs, a little drug baggie. And he was like, what would you have done, Robert, if there was, like, drugs in there? And I was like, I don't know. It made me think, you know, and it also made me realize that, wow, I'm still only 4 months sober, where I feel like I've a year, just so much has happened.
Yeah.
And when I put that I don't know out there, what I did realize is I need to keep going to meetings, I need to keep talking, keep in touch with my sponsors, because if I don't know that I could pass over it or if I didn't know if I could pick it up, and that's when, then I got over, you know, 2 days later, I was told no about the birth certificate, and then I'm walking home, and I passed my friend on the street, and he was like, don't use, you're doing so good, and I was like,
yeah.
And I kept walking, and I crossed the street, and there in the dirt's a meth pipe. And I was like, really? At my lowest point? So, you know, I was putting out there all this negativity, and it was coming back. And then a friend, I ran back to him, and he took that pipe, and he smashed it into the concrete. So that was God, of my understanding, turning me around and these things that I've learned, because I don't want to go back to that. And it turned me around, and I ran 9 blocks to catch up with him, and I don't know how in my age. Without any kind of exercise, I ran 9 blocks nonstop, and he smashed it, and he's like, sweetie, we need to go to a meeting. So we were walking over to the meeting, and this is when, remember, I saw you, and I told you about this story, and I was like, girl, I got a story to tell you. And this guy that we were passing, I made a joke, because he was coming out of this meeting,
because
I was joking about the fact that I've been chairing a couple morning meetings, not to brag on it, but he wanted to get paperwork signed that some people have to get signed to go to these AA meetings, and I was like, I can sign it for you, I chair sometimes, and it was just as a joke, you know. I get into the meeting, and there was nobody there to chair it. So they were like, Robert, you want to chair it? And I looked up again at God. I'm like, really? Really? You know, I made a tasteless joke about chairing a meeting. Yes, and now I've got to chair a meeting because I made a tasteless joke. And then this is just right after I find a meth pipe at my lowest point of the day. You know, and the minute I put out that energy, that was like, as I would think, the devil or negativity, like, tempting me, because I had already said, I don't know what I would do if I found drugs. I don't know what I, you know, I don't know what I want to use. What was me? And as soon as I was, like, being a victim, there was a
pipe
in the middle of the dirt on it, in a road where I would have never have crossed at that precise moment. Come on. More than coincidence? Yeah. Way
that's
more.
Above
and
beyond. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's these little things that happen to me daily, whether it's good or bad, and I would rather have it good. So I learned that day to stop putting out into the world. And it's just like prayer. If you talk about something negative, it's going to get negative. And if you, if you give into your fears, it can only get worse. Don't be scared of anything. You know, be scared of not succeeding. I mean, and the only way not to is to, like, just walk right through it. I would rather walk through a fear and be done with it than to run and hide from it. And, you know, and I'm learning that if I'm not scared of it, that it's not so bad. And that's when I think, let go, let God, like they say at AA.
Yeah, you know, that that goes back to when I first started doing these shows. You know, it's like I was asked a question a long time ago, what would you do if you wasn't afraid? And, I mean, it's pretty much walking through that fear, getting it done, and look, you know, here is that I get to be an example of the apostle, you know, helping bring out, you know, these beautiful stories to help to teach the next person and to help the next person. So, I mean, I know about fear. Oh, honey. do the thing you fear, and the death of fear is certain. That's a quote by Brian Tracy that I just try to embed in my conscious. Just do the thing you fear, and the death of it is certain. That's been proven.
Yep. It does.
So, Robert, you know, I have noticed that with spiritual awakening that there are many different levels of awakening. Could you describe a few different levels in which you experienced?
For me, I mean, levels, stages, they were, you know, from those little bitty, as I call them, thumps in the heads to these profound moments where I'm learning that there truly is something better out there. You just have to want it and be open to accept it. These stages are hard for me to explain. It's one of those things that we go through in life. At that moment, you know, you can sit there and talk about the incredible, like, growth of it, but to reflect back on it, sometimes it's so hard. But every day it just, for me, the stages are, it's getting better, and it truly is through fellowship and just helping out other people. Everything that you do, it gets you to a higher state of consciousness, and doing the right thing really does get you on a different level, and not really a playing field, but you really do start to awaken, like I just mentioned, to a higher state of consciousness, that there is something
absolutely
bigger out there.
Yeah, you know,
for me, the synchronicity is big.
Yeah, oh my God. For me, you know, Robert, it was just like the little quotes. You know, I'll use little quotes and affirmations, you know, just to kind of see turning the negatives into the positives. It started just as simple as that, you know, trying to turn a negative into a positive. And then it grew to actually taking action with when I'm in these situations, turning negative situations into positive situations with using those very same affirmations. So I learned from the affirmations, then I was able to display those things with action. And then from there, it went on to, awakening like the third eye, you know, into being connected to this divine energy, and then, you know, being aware of the synchronicity, you know, in the coincidence things. And, you know, Robert, just like I'll share a story with you with what just happened to me, you know, like now I'm getting at a point to where I'm having to jump back into the matrix, and I'm having to just work again for money. And I didn't know, I I actually had a dream. It started out with a dream. That's going to be another thing that I'm going to – lucid dreams is another thing that I know that I'm going to experience. But it started with a dream, and the dream was to, you know, have a job within this community, rehab community. And I did not know how I was going to do it. I was just pretty much just dreaming it. And it was heavy on my conscience. And the very next day, I had caught the bus, and I seen one of our good friends on the bus, and he goes, "Hey, Keith, guess what? This rehab such and such and such is hiring and this and that." And so I'm like, I said, "Oh, my God." I was just thinking and meditating on that, and talk about coincidence. You know, I get on the bus, and here it is, him telling me a specific lead about a job, I was just so wowed by that. Just the many different levels, synchronicity is like one of the biggest ones that is happening for me in my life. And it's just things are all just starting to sync in together, you know, with my schooling that I'm going to. You know, I'm studying metaphysics now, and metaphysics and this talk show, and it's, oh my God, it's just, it's incredible.
Well, I remember when you say metaphysics, I think I was thinking back to that time in Homeward Bound where you were watching a video in the TV room about quantum physics. And I will tell you what, it's those moments, you know, with you coming into my life and just those little bitty things like that I never would have, like, been aware of. I've heard of quantum physics, but I never knew what those were. And then I sat there and watched that video with you, and then that one segment where it has this this guy who he has these bottles of distilled water, and he taped these words, these affirmations to the water, and they was just written on paper. And there was one that was like love, and, you know, all the other ones had really beautiful words taped to them. And then on this one bottle, he taped the words, "I hate you, die." And, you know, he did a study back on them, and in the bottles that had beautiful words on them, there were these gorgeous crystals that started forming in the water. And then the one that said, "Die, I hate you," and the water was yellow looking, and it was like death. And then, you know, and then they start talking about now our bodies being so, this percentage that is so high of made out of water. When we just even start putting negativity into us, whether it's like listening to people and words, and then how that can affect us, if it can affect distilled water, how can they not with that? And the synchronicity, I just bring that up because those are, you know, coming into my life and to be open to understand that, which that happened to do with sobriety and like learning about to become better people and just even treating ourselves right. There is so much synchronicity in the world when you're aware of it spiritually, mentally, and especially just being conscious to your surroundings and the synchronicity that's constantly going on around us is incredible. And once you start seeing it, there's just this higher understanding or a different level. It is.
I wanted to point out to anyone who's listening, Dr. Emoto is the one. He has many different studies on water. And the movie that we were watching, Robert and I, was What the Bleep Do We Know, which is a great movie. That and The Secret, those are two movies that I recommend for anyone to watch. Oh, my God. And, you know, just real quick on the levels of awakening, you know how The Secret, I watched it many years ago, and I was like, okay, this is a different perspective. This is nice. This is cute, you know, but I didn't understand any of it. But as I started to awaken those many different levels of myself, and now I watched The Secret last week, and then I started to see it in a whole new light. I started to understand, you know, the law of attraction is what that movie is based around. And that I had a whole new different outlook on the whole movie, and that's where those levels of awakening starts to come beneficial for us in our lives. And the movie What the Bleak Do We Know, what it was like, you know, because our body, I believe it's 80 or 90% of our body is water, and it's just like those affirmations. They were saying affirmations to the distilled water, and like if you say a negative affirmation, the water was like all ugly and everywhere, and when you would say like a positive affirmation to the water, you know, it would be like a beautiful, like the crystals you were stating, and it was like this gorgeous masterpiece, you know, and that's how it is with us. We become these gorgeous vehicles of light, you know, just a beautiful work of art, and we're just projecting light back into the universe, you know. And then also, just like with your stories, Robert, you know, you reflect, you and I both, you know, we reflect that back to us. It's just, oh, my God. You know, one of my great teachers, Greg Walsh, Conversations with – no, I'm sorry, not Conversations with G, because he has a new one now, but Greg Walsh, he's amazing, and he taught me about the law of reflection, and it's like what we put out is what we reflect very back into our lives, you know, and it's like that – and it's like, you know, you were in a stoop, you know, and you was in a real low vibration. Energy space, and you in the manifestation of the meth pipe came, and all of these, you know, and when you change your frequency and you started to, you know, come back up vibrationally, you started to manifest. You were chairperson, you know, you spoke it, and bam, you know, you're chairperson. It's just amazing how all of this just works out, and it's real, people. It really is real.
It is real. It's those things that I've heard. I was like, yeah, whatever. And here's the one other that little clincher with that day. When I went in that meeting, and I just went because I needed to talk and share this story of what the fuck I just found. Sorry about that language. And all I wanted to do was go and share my story, because that's what you do in AA and all these other groups or anywhere. You need to just go and share your story. If you tell it, even though it was bad energy of what was going on, as soon as you just get it out, speak it, you're releasing that energy out of your body, and it's helping. But when I got there and I was like, you know, I found out I had to chair a meeting, and I just started like, oh, my gosh, are you kidding me? So now I have to chair a meeting, which was great because, you know, I had something to say. So there were two books that we normally read from, and one was being read by someone down the line on a table. So I was like, fine, I'll grab this one, which is called 24 Hours a Day. And it's approved AA literature. So I went to the date that it was, and I started reading. And, like, the first paragraph, the small paragraph, it was like, okay, I read it, didn't really connect with it. The second one was, it was the prayer for the day, or meditation for the day. No, it was actually, it was the prayer for the day. And I started reading it, and this is where it got really freaky, because my friend was sitting right next to me. But there was one line in it, and it said, when you encounter a situation beyond your strength, and I just did, I found a meth pipe, which was encountering a situation that was so beyond my strength. I was in the, as they call it, excuse my language, the fuck it mode, where I was just like, fuck it.
Yeah.
And I wanted to just go use. And so here I am in a moment in dealing with a situation beyond my strength. And it was like, when you were in a situation beyond your strength, that's when you turn to your higher power, whatever that is, and you either pray about it or you go somewhere and you share it. And this is and here I am reading what I'm reading on a page that's already pre-written for long periods of time for this day that it was happening. And here I am reading about a situation that just frickin' happened to me, and it was almost verbatim. I was like, whoa. Those are the things that I deal with daily, and people around me had, and I told you this the other day, had it just been me seeing this, I would have thought, you know, this God thing, everything is in my head. But I have people that are around me going, holy crap, Robert, you were just praying about that, you were just talking about that. Little things, I mean, when there are billions and trillions of subjects and topics and things that can happen to us, and then we say something so specific and so personal and so not even generalized, where it can be just anything like psychics, like, oh, you will find love. Well, of course I'm going to find love one day. But these are things that are so freaking personal and so, like, I mean, I don't want to say minuscule, but so hard to, like, it can't be just generalization. It can't be coincidental. I mean, for something like that to just happen to me, my friend's like, we need to go share this at a meeting. And I get there, and now I have to share or, like, run the meeting, and what I have to share is written in a book that I'm reading from. What?
Yeah.
Come on. That's when I realized, you know, that was another big moment that there are no coincidences, and this is part of that beautiful picture that is bringing me to this one place that I needed and I wanted to be. I want to have a life that is functional, that I want to have my own place that I can be proud of, and all these little things just so I can be a better person to help other people, because none of this is it, my doing. My doing has gotten me to the streets, has gotten me to the drugs. When I let go of me trying to do it, it's given to you. The things you want that you need to be a good person so you can help other people are then given to you. And I don't really truly know if that, you know, is God in a biblical sense, but I do know it is given that energy to something else beyond my comprehension. But believing that there is something out there that is, like I said, I don't know if it's got a master plan or gears or it's playing a video game called Earth, you know, and controlling all these little characters down there. But I do know you do give back what you get out there. And as soon as I just give love, give understanding, and totally say, look, I can't do this. It's not my money. It's not my house. Nothing is mine. I mean, I didn't make it. It was on this earth. These little materials have always been here. It is never mine. I might pay just so I kind of own them.
It is going to be
but
here.
nothing is mine. Nothing is. And I'm grateful for breathing, for walking, for laying in a bed, for having a roof over my head. And I'm blessed for the food that is grown for us that we eat. And I'm understanding why people pray for these things.
Yeah.
Because they truly are these little things that we take for granted, you know, me dying and being on life support. You know, I had a tube breathing for me, and I still didn't appreciate the fact that I can breathe for myself.
Yeah,
and, you know,
absolutely.
There's
that's amazing.
Too much divine perfectness in the world. Too much divine perfectness in the world.
You know, Robert, there was something that you stated in a conversation that I took note of, and you said, in growth, we learn to speak from our hearts and not our minds. So could you elaborate on what you mean by this, and also how are you speaking from your heart today?
That had to do with there was that day that, every time that I would sit there and you know, and AKA pray, and give this energy to life and these blessed, just being grateful. I mean, you got to be the gratefulness that I have and giving gratitude to everything that outside of myself. When I do, I learned, I was like, I was wondering what made it so different for me to kneel and pray. And I'm kind of, you know, I was like, how do things that I say get answered so quickly? And I don't know if this is like what does it, but what I've learned is, you know, back when I was numb, like that root canal, everything that I did was just so disconnected from my higher power, from God, from energy, from life. I was so disconnected, just like that numbness in my mouth. When I was on drugs, I was numb, and I would sit there and I would beg, you know, like, please God, help me in those moments where I'm homeless. And it is weird how in our moments of desire, need, we're like, God, now God exists. All of a sudden, now he exists, you know? So you know, when I was speaking, because there was a disconnect, the drugs had numbed me. Life had numbed me. My mind, my own freaking head numbed me. And disconnected me from my heart. And I would sit there and just speak through my mouth, because in my head I wanted help. But there was nothing in my heart, because I was numb. I disconnected. And once I sobered up, and, you know, I really truly want the things, and, you know, drugs still scare me to death, because I had my moments where I was like, wow, I'm going to miss certain things, or, you know, I don't want to go back there. That is a horrible place for me to be. There might be functioning people out there who can do it, But for Robert Cochran, mm-hmm. I can't do it. And I realized that I am no longer speaking with my head and my mouth because I stay out of my head, danger zone. But my heart,
yeah.
which I've always known I've had a big heart. I really, truly have always cared about
people.
Yeah,
you do.
All I want to do, and I try, you know, I make sure I don't offend anyone, but I will do anything it takes
you
to
do.
Make them laugh. I'll push my groceries
yeah.
into someone else's groceries at the checkout, and I'll tell the cashier, I'm like, she'll get it. And they'll just sit there like, but, you know, whenever
yeah.
you get a chuckle out of them, you know, that's what I'm
mm-hmm.
about. And, you know, as soon as I started speaking from my heart and giving that thankfulness and that gratitude back to life, you know, once I
yeah.
started speaking from my heart and not my head and my mouth, that's one other level of spiritual awareness that I started to
mm-hmm.
see, because that is, I mean, in the morning I ask, you know, my God of my understanding, and I ask him to come into my heart, which it reflects back in my childhood, where I was told that what God is love. And that's what I want in my heart. I want love in my heart. So if God is love, and the universe is God, and this energy that, you know, I truly think what God is just a massive, massive energy. And it's everybody's living experience that has joined it, and it just gets bigger and more knowledgeable, and we keep coming back to feed it more energy and more knowledge and different experiences. But once
yeah.
I connect with that and I speak from my heart and I truly, truly want people that are around me that I know to be okay, and I want them to be sober, and I want the houses they sleep in to be guarded with angels and good energy, and I want everyone to just, and once I give that first and truly want it, and just whatever it is, no matter what it is, as long as I just speak from my heart, it doesn't even have to be
mm-hmm.
through prayer. It could just be everyday conversation and not lying to people anymore about stupid things
yeah.
that I thought I needed to do. Now when I speak from the heart, that's kind of what I'm at. I don't go into my head. I don't just talk now like I'm numb, like I don't know what I'm saying. I speak from my heart,
yeah.
and that's where
yeah,
I want to use that with all this, this being an apostle now, and still I will always be a disciple to the day I die. Cause I'm not going to be so all knowing
yeah.
that I know it all, because
yeah.
I think as soon as I do that, that's when I will relapse of anything, whether it be drugs or my old behaviors. I never will know it all, and I'm happy with that. I'm happy to learn things daily.
You know, I was going to ask you what makes you beautiful, but I think you just said it. Yeah, that's so beautiful, Robert. Let me ask you, though, could you describe what you understand the calling on your life to be?
That's kind of interesting you ask. One of these classes that I'm taking for, and it's, you know, after you get out of, you know, treatment centers, they want you to do these extended treatment classes. And
mm-hmm.
my teacher, she realized that I did not know who Robert was. I have conformed
yeah.
to everyone else my whole life and to do what they wanted to make them happy. And I guess to answer that, the one thing I just want to continue doing is everything that I have ever learned, all my hardships, which weren't, they were difficult lessons, no difficult than, like, probably, for me, it would be, like, trigonometry in high school. That would be a difficult lesson for me to learn. and probably a headache. And I wanted everything that I have experienced and persevered through and became better of a person for it. I guess that's what I want to just be, is I want to be a missionary. I want to help others. I've coming from a state of hurricanes and seeing people lose everything and me having lost everything in my own way. But when I see people who lose things, you know, out of their control because of nature, or a tornado or a fire, and I see these things, I'm so heart-wrenched about it. And, you know, I would just give up everything that I can own to help them versus the way I used to do it. But that's what I
yeah.
want to do, and what I want to just be is continue doing the right thing and telling my story, whether and telling it to whoever needs and who is open to listen, because there is hope out there for everyone. And we have all gone through everything everyone else has gone through. But until we start sharing our stories and talking about it to people, and you know, it's that, and sharing that one thing that you might think might not mean crap to you, it could save someone else's life, because to them, that could be the worst thing in the world going on in their life. And to know that someone's going through it and they made it through it, whether it's abuse from a spouse or a parent, or being kicked out because you're gay or because you're a color or anything, just anything out there. If you don't share your experiences, it's just, I think that's truly what it's all about. And that's what I want to just continue doing. And it's to me, that's a beautiful thing.
Yes, yes. Okay, Robert, we have about 14 minutes left on here. So just in wrapping up, I want to know, as your legacy, what would you like the world to know?
Wow. Well, I definitely don't want a statue erect of me, because I think I've made I think in my past I have made an impression on people. I'm not going to say in the best way possible. I don't know. I would think my legacy, I want to continue to make people laugh. And I guess my legacy would be, if my name is just brought up, I truly don't want it to be of the bad stuff that people know of in me in my past. I don't know if I want to leave such a legacy other than if I do touch people's lives or come into them, I want them to feel good that they got to meet me. And I definitely want to feel good about meeting them, because I don't know, I guess I have to give that up to Disney of meeting thousands and thousands of people a year. That I do love being around people, and my legacy would be continued laughter. I don't know.
Continued
that
laughter.
One would be a really tough one, because, you know, it's like Miss America. I want world peace. I do.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
my legacy. I just don't want to leave a bad taste in people's mouths like I have in the past.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to help people grow any way I can, and just. My legacy would be just be a better person.
Yeah, and you're doing that, Robert. You're doing that. You know, everything that you're saying and that you're talking about, you're actually doing it, Robert. You really are. It's such a blessing, you know, to come with you and just share our stories and just give back in this kind of way. You know, for that, what I was going to say, that I would like the world to know that you are free, and that the choice of freedom lies within you right here, right now. You know, that the fact that we have a choice to be free.
And not to be the director of our own shows.
Oh, my God, the director of our own. How many times have we bumped our head on that one?
Yes. As my sponsor in the AA book has read so many times, when something goes on, and I find it like I'm being attacked from other people, he'll go to this one chapter, and he's like, as soon as we stop being the producers and the directors and the actors of our own show, you know, do we realize that, you know, our things get better? And just all I can say is, you know, stop trying to control things. If they're getting bad, you know, and you're struggling through them, stop trying to make it better. It will get better as soon as you stop trying to control it. I've tried harder and harder and harder, and it got worse and worse and worse. And as soon as I let go and said, hey, something else can help me.
Yeah, you know, Robert, we actually have a caller on. Would you like to take a question?
Sure.
All right.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's see, let's bring them on. All right. All right, caller 505, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Hello.
Hey, do you have a question for us today?
Well, I just logged in, actually, and it was pretty interesting. I was reading your introduction here on the computer, and it talked about, you know, synchronicity, coincidences, and spiritual awakening. So I just wanted to join in. And I don't know if you're taking questions or comments, but
well, yeah, we have about 10 minutes left. So, yeah, is there anything that you want to discuss or talk about revolving the subject matter?
Yes, I just wanted to share that about 4 years ago. Well, I've been on a journey for 15 years, but about 4 years ago, the real awakening happened to me when I met an individual, and I just woke up after meeting an individual, and I heard the word purity as I looked at this individual, and it sounds kind of strange, but that led me down this whole path of awakening, because that had never happened to me before.
Mm-hmm.
And I went searching, and here I am on this journey. It's been a beautiful journey. So I just wanted to find out if, you know, other people have experienced it like that. And that's when I first heard, you know, like a voice, you know, speaking to me. And then, of course, I got close to nature. And just being outside, pulling weeds.
Nature is good. Nature is a good one.
Yeah, it is. It's a good way to center yourself.
Well, it's almost as though God put a couple of knee pads on me, and I went outside and I pulled weeds on my hands and knees, and just that's when everything just, I woke up at that point. And It was just miraculous that, you know, that would happen to me.
Wow. So yeah, you're saying, so go ahead, Robert.
No, you go ahead. You're okay.
No, I was just going to say, so your spiritual awakening came through nature.
Yes, and also I was not aware at the time of soulmates and reincarnation. And when I met an individual, I guess I must have had a past life with this person, and because I saw their soul, I felt their soul through their eyes, and that to me was like, whoa, their soul spoke to me, and that had never happened. It just really threw me off, because I was not aware of that type of life, because I had grown up in a particular church all my life, and we were not taught that. So then I went searching, and then I found information about, you know, soulmates and twin flames, and then also that we may have had past lives, you know, with certain people.
I do believe certain people will always be in your lives and have been in your previous lives. I was told by a friend of mine who is really into the past lives, and definitely the eyes are the windows into the soul. When I talk to people, I stare them dead in their eyes, and you can read so much through them. And the people that are in your lives now, from what I've come to understand, were people who have always been around you, like in your previous lives. It's the same souls like around you, and you constantly will keep re-meeting these people in your next lives. And it's a hard one to grasp, but it makes sense, and I do believe that's where deja vus sometimes come from, that you do, like, you've lived that moment before when you know you never have. And I've just been told that you will always have those people in your lives. And it's a hard one to grasp, but I believe it. It just feels right and normal to, and it just, for some reason to me, just makes sense.
Yeah, because I had never heard anything when I would look at other people, and this individual was just there, and I heard the word purity, and I looked. It was so strange at that moment. I saw his soul. That, to me, blew my mind. I just couldn't believe that was happening. So I went searching, and then I came across all this, and here I am. And I didn't even know anything about spiritual guides or anything. and here I am.
Yeah.
So that was the awakening point, and also along with pulling weeds outside. But,
yeah.
putting my face down to the earth and just working.
What was your name again?
My name is Patricia.
Okay, Patricia, was it kind of like this when you met the person that you're talking about? Was it kind of like this unexplainable connection, like this burst of energy, and y'all was just connected and you couldn't explain what was going on?
Oh, yes. It was total synchronicity, because somebody had told me out of the blue, you need to go to this particular place. And I said, no, I don't. Why do I need to go there? So anyway, I had to go there, and there they were, and we didn't even exchange names or anything, and I never saw them again.
Wow.
Never even got a chance to say thank you for that experience, but I'm sure that sometime we will.
Yeah, that's a beautiful experience. You know, that just goes to show you the many different aspects in which we awake. You know, with her, it's with nature, with Robert, you know, what you shared, and, you know, through the addiction and the book that I had came across. There's so many different ways that we begin to awake, and I think that is so beautiful, guys.
Well, I just want to leave you with this, that sometimes we don't, no, you never know how you're going to affect someone. And it could be just as simple as looking at someone, and you can just stir something in that person. And to me, that was very healing. I learned how to love, and I became a more loving person after that.
Wow, Patricia.
So we never know.
That is amazing.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Well, we have 3 minutes left, so we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Patricia, thank you for sharing that beautiful story. And, you know, and we're going to go ahead and leave it with that, because that's a beautiful message to go ahead and, you know, kind of let people marinate with. So, yeah.
Well,
that's
thank
all,
you
that's
for
what
letting
it's
me
all
share.
About, love.
Yeah.
Oh, you're welcome.
Well,
you're
you
welcome.
Have a blessed
all right.
night. Thank you.
All right,
bye-bye.
You too. Good luck on your journey.
Thank you.
Yeah, all right. Okay. Robert, are you there?
I'm here. That was awesome.
Okay. Yes, that was awesome. Thank you, Patricia.
Those are those moments where you're told to just stop and smell the roses or stop to pick the weeds. But when you slow down and center yourself, like she was open to a new experience to go somewhere where a friend's like, you need to go here. And she's like, no. But when you are open to a new experience and you go with that understanding to receive it, just the smallest little profound moment, it might be small to everyone else in the world, but that's what makes it so beautiful, is because to your own self, it's profound and huge. And something that never would have happened had you not been accepting to, or open to accept something new and wanting something.
Yeah. Absolutely. And with her, I was going to say, with her experience, you know, she learned how to love again. It was only for a moment. She said that she didn't even get to see him again. She didn't get to say goodbye or anything. But that impact that, you know, she had helped her to learn how to love again. So it awakened that aspect of herself. Again, you know, because I feel that it's always there. It's never went away. It was just dormant, and that experience helped her to awaken that. Oh, that's so beautiful.
It is.
All right, Robert. Well, we have a few seconds left, Robert. I want to thank you for coming on, taking your time, and just sharing your beautiful story, Robert.
I want to thank you for having me, Keithon, and I love the fact that we've got to meet, and we're going to continue this friendship and keep growing in life, and we'll just keep sharing and keep sharing to help others.
Yeah, absolutely. And Robert will be back on. I want to let you guys know, if you guys want to contact the guest or want to contact the host myself, you can always email the show at enhancingawarenessradio, all lowercase, at gmail.com. And also, I want to leave you guys with a quote, and that's to never blame anyone in your life. Good people give you happiness, bad people give you experience, worst people give you a lesson, and the best people give you memories.
Ooh,
all right, guys.
Awesome.
All right,
awesome.
Guys. Yes, I love you guys. I love you, Robert. Thank you again.
Love
and
you too.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Bye.